You know how to book flights and hotels. All you're missing is a tool to plan the travel experiences you'll have once you arrive. That's why you need Viator. Book guided tours, activities, excursions, and more in one place to make your trip truly unforgettable. Viator has over 300,000 travel experiences to choose from. Everything from simple tours to extreme adventures and all the niche, interesting stuff in between. So you can plan something that everyone you're traveling with will enjoy. Real traveler reviews give the inside scoop from people who've already been on the experiences you're considering, so you can plan with confidence. Free cancellation helps you plan for the unexpected, and 24/7 customer support means you can travel worry-free. Download the Viator app now and use code Viator10 for 10% off your first booking in the app. Find travel experiences for you. Do more with Viator.
When you need mealtime inspiration, it's worth shopping Kroger, where you'll find over 30,000 mouthwatering choices that excite your inner foodie. And no matter what tasty choice you make, you'll enjoy our everyday low prices, plus extra ways to save, like digital coupons worth over $600 each week. You can also save up to $1 off per gallon at the pump with fuel points. More savings and more inspiring flavors make shopping Kroger worth it every time. Kroger, fresh for everyone. Fuel restrictions apply.
Save big on brunch for mom, all in the Kroger app. Get 16-ounce packs of flavorful Angus 90% lean ground sirloin for $4.99 each with a digital coupon. Then buy two, get two free on 12 packs of delicious Coca-Cola, Pepsi, or 7-Up, all with your card. Shop these deals at your local Kroger today, or tap the screen now to download the Kroger app to save big today. Kroger, fresh for everyone. Prices and product availability subject to change. Restrictions apply. See site for details.
With your host, Andrew Donaldson, this is Herd Tell.
Welcome back to Herd Tell. Okay, new face. Love getting new contributors on, but he's from an old group of friends. He's a Young Voices contributor. He's up in Michigan at the University of Michigan at Ann Arbor, although for the purposes of this conversation, we will not hold that against him because it ain't his fault that Rich Rod went up there. Karim Rafai, how are you, my friend? Thank you so much for joining the program.
I'm good. How are you? Thank you so much for having me.
I'm good. I wish we didn't have to talk about this kind of a topic, but we do because it's the kind of world we live in. You're writing in the Detroit News about it. I want to preface it with this because you've already wrote this piece a few days ago. Just in the few days since you read it, it's all over the news. Protests, dissidents, crackdowns on protests, how authoritative regimes like China, like Vladimir Putin, like others, are extending their reach into Western nations to try to cut down on dissent. This is something, obviously, you probably started researching this a week or two ago. This is something that's going to accelerate in the coming weeks, I think. Is that how it feels to you too?
For certain, yeah. And like I say in the piece, you know, we're all aware that these regimes crack down on dissent within their own borders, but I really wanted to call attention to kind of this growing phenomenon of what Drew, the guy I interviewed, and I call the export of repression abroad.
That's a great term. You should trademark that real quick or maybe get the domain name for it, because that's exactly what they're doing. We throw around terms like colonialism and imperialism, but then when you look at China, well, they're being imperialistic about things, but they're being imperialistic about repression and about controlling speech and narratives and things like this. That's part of what you're getting at here in the bigger picture before we get into the specifics of this piece. In the modern world with modern technology, they have to fight with information. They're trying to sequester free speech. That's nothing new in history, but it's very different in the modern age. And they're not just content to do it in their own countries. They're going worldwide with it.
Absolutely.
What's the first thing you hit on when you went to look at this? I want you to tell us the story, because I think things like this, we get a little buzzwordy on them sometimes. Of course, the old thing about, you know, a million people is a statistic, one man's a tragedy. You highlight this guy in England, and he was protesting, and he got snatched up. But it's also indicative of this tactic that's been used. Tell us the story of this guy and why you started out with it to bring attention to this issue.
For sure. So his name is Drew Pavlou. He is an Australian pro-democracy activist. He's made headlines for a couple of years now. Famously, he was removed from Wimbledon after holding up a sign, I believe, that said, "Where is Peng Shuai?" That famous Chinese tennis player who lodged sexual assault allegations at a top CCP official. So he's been in the public eye for a while now. And I've gotten to know him recently pretty intimately. And a few months ago now, or a couple of weeks ago, he was protesting in front of the Chinese embassy in London. And essentially, what happened was a fake bomb threat under his name was emailed to the embassy. The embassy called the police. He was arrested. He was in, jail for 24 hours, like no access to consular assistance. He was in a whole bunch of legal trouble. The authorities were not, believing his story that this was a fake threat. He was essentially trapped in London for almost a month because of court dates. He was told, if he left the country, he may be arrested. And all of this just sparking from him standing outside an embassy with a couple of flags, ended up with him being arrested for like threatening to commit a terroristic act.
And the thing about this is, and as you detailed it, the reason we know this was probably a setup is because the Chinese officials, the CCP and their intelligence and their security apparatus, they've targeted him before. So the fact that he was just standing out there, they knew well and good who this guy was, and they made sure it was a very specific, oh, this is the guy that did that, right?
Absolutely. And the exact same thing happened to him again this week in Australia, another fake bomb threat under his name. But now finally, authorities have caught on that this is, a targeted campaign against him. So he's not facing really any legal trouble from what I know now. But yeah, it just continues.
The thing about this is almost like the swatting tactic we've seen in American domestic politics. But on an international level, this has extreme consequences. Like you said, he's an Australian, so he's a Commonwealth guy. He should be able to travel. This could prevent him from traveling. This is very much a way of trying to tap down dissent, because the reason they go after a high-profile dissenter like him is because if you can get him, then the rest are quiet. We just had on our program talking about Hong Kong with Francis Wei, and then they're like, look, when they took out the top 50 or 60 organizers, all the protests in Hong Kong stopped. This is a pattern. This is something the Chinese Communist Party has down to a science. They know what they're doing this, and the pattern is something we should see to see how it's reaching out worldwide, and you touch on that.
Absolutely. Like you mentioned with Hong Kong, diaspora communities have been targeted for a really long time now. Uyghurs, Hong Kongers, Taiwanese people, especially on college campuses too. There's, the CSSA, which is the Chinese Student Scholars Association, which, there's a bunch of accusations that the Chinese government uses that organization on campuses to spy on dissent from students. So Drew kind of also drew that to my attention as well, that a lot of the diaspora communities in the UK and in Australia have been constant targets by the CCP, even once they've left China's borders.
And what does he say when you talk to him? Again, put a personal face on this, because we understand the geopolitics of it. We understand the human rights issue part of it. Well, most people that are functional adults that aren't wicked understand it. There's some people in the world that don't. When you're talking to him, what comes across? Like, what drives people to keep dissenting like this? Is it the people he knows personally? Is it just the wrongness of it? When you're talking to somebody like that one-on-one, not through a news story, not through a written piece, not through propaganda videos and YouTube, both for and against, what is it that comes across?
Yeah, like you mentioned, he's made a lot of close connections with people from those diaspora communities. And when you talk to them and you hear their stories, it's impossible not to empathize. As a Syrian too, like I'm a part of a diaspora community from an authoritarian country. And when I tell my story to people who are not Syrian, I see that kind of empathy in Drew as well, even though he's not Chinese and he's, from Australia, born and raised, from what I know. You can just really tell he has a lot of empathy, and he's heard a lot of personal stories from, you know, Tibetans and Uyghurs, etc.
Let me ask you about that, because, you know, Syria and Assad and Russia and ISIS, that was just a brutal mix of basically all the world's worst actors converging, and the Syrian people ended up paying a heavy, heavy price, a massive price in death in wiped out cities. We'll probably never know the actual death toll. When you're talking to somebody who maybe doesn't follow politics, especially world politics, and doesn't even know something like that even exists, how's it hit you? Do you feel do you just not want to talk about it? Do you feel a responsibility as somebody in a diaspora community of, I need to explain to them why this is so important? Talk about that, because I've talked to so many people in these kind of communities. We've had them on the show before, and they all talk about it. It's like, this isn't really what I want, but I feel a burden about this sort of thing. I feel like I'm representative of it. How do you carry that burden, and do you feel it?
I definitely feel like I have an obligation to speak up for people in Syria who never had the chance to, especially for my family as well. They've gone through a lot. And, you know, I was privileged enough to be born in the United States. So it's kind of like a survivor's guilt kind of thing. You know, if my parents didn't choose to immigrate here, I probably would have been born in Aleppo, and who knows where I would be right now. So it does kind of come out of not only a feeling of obligation, but I want to share my story and the story of other Syrians and what they've gone through, because, you know, my ultimate goal is to make sure that what happened in Syria doesn't happen ever again anywhere else. And that's why I have a lot of empathy, you know, for these diaspora communities from China and from Taiwan and from Hong Kong, because, you know, their plight is, it's different, but it's similar, this, you know, reverberating effect of authoritarianism. Even when you're diaspora, it still affects you every single day. So,
yeah. And what you're saying about survivor's guilt is the same thing a lot of those people have said when we've interviewed them and talked to them, or even talked to them offline, just prepping. Obviously Syria is a terrible thing. When you see, that's kind of the end game of it though, where you just have leveled, literally you talk about Aleppo, like just rubble for most of it, unfortunately. Talk about, for somebody who just can't draw the line, no matter how you explain it to them, is like, the reason you have to stand up to a bomb threat in London, the reason you have to stand up to Putin in Ukraine, before it gets to that shooting war, before you get to tens of thousands of dead, before you get to a level cities, this quieting of dissent is how that starts. You draw that straight line in your advocacy. You've done it on your Twitter account. You do it in this piece. But just explain to people, that's why this is so important, because that is how, you know, that crushing of dissent is what leads to those level cities every single time.
Absolutely. Yeah. You know, it's not always the most attractive and appealing thing to, you know, call out foreign human rights abuse when it's not trendy. You know what I mean? So Ukrainian activists have been talking about Ukraine since the annexation of Crimea, and they've been largely ignored. They've been warning us about Putin for years. Syrian activists, the exact same thing. We've been warning about Russia for years, largely ignored. And until Russia actually mobilizes a full invasion of a European country is when it becomes trendy and sexy to talk about, oh, Russia is so bad, we need to do something about Russia, et cetera, et cetera. When in reality, if we had jumped to action like we should have years ago, we wouldn't be at the place where we are today, with entire cities in Ukraine and Syria being leveled and thousands, tens of thousands of people being dead.
Yeah. Unfortunately, you're correct. Kareem Rafai joining us on Herd Tale. We're going to take a quick commercial break. We come back, there's more in this piece. He talks about Iran. We're going to talk some more about China. We're going to talk some more about dissidents and Russia. All three of those heavily in the news cycle right now. We're going to work through them with our friend Raheem Jig, Young Voices contributor. Great conversation, deep conversation, but an important one to have. Herd Tale continues right after this.
Sick of being upsold at gyms?
My guy, you're currently a base member. For $90 more, I can upgrade you to our Shred membership. For $130 more, you'll be a swole member. And for just $300 more, you'll reach Sweat Platinum.
At Planet Fitness, you'll get energy without the upsell. Never pushy, always free fitness training and equipment for every workout. It's fitness that fits your budget.
Join Planet Fitness for just $1 down and $10 a month. Cancel anytime. Deal ends Friday, May 10th. See Home Club for details.
When you need mealtime inspiration, it's worth shopping Kroger, where you'll find over 30,000 mouthwatering choices that excite your inner foodie. And no matter what tasty choice you make, you'll enjoy our everyday low prices, plus extra ways to save, like digital coupons worth over $600 each week. You can also save up to $1 off per gallon at the pump with fuel points. More savings and more inspiring flavors make shopping Kroger worth it every time. Kroger, fresh for everyone. Fuel restrictions apply.
Now, welcome back to Hurtel, continuing our conversation with Kareem Rafai. He's up in Michigan right now, but he's talking about dissent, talking about authoritarianism, talking about protesting them and the very real cost that protest can have. On that vein, we've got it right in the news right now as we're speaking, really, in Iran. We have massive protests, the death of a woman at the hands of the morality police, they call it. She died in custody, and especially the women and others are protesting back. They're getting killed in the streets for it. We've seen this before in 2019. We've seen it before other times in Iran where they'll do this really brutal crackdown. When you're talking about dissent and how important it is and protesting, how's it hit when you see something like this? Because, you know, let's be honest here. Sometimes protesting gets a little performative and there's actually a protesting industry. But when you see this kind of bravery, women ripping off their hijabs and cutting their hair in public and this sort of thing, boy, that really hits home on how important this stuff is to me. How's it hit with you though?
Absolutely. Absolutely. I mean, they are the peak of bravery. People standing up in regimes as repressive as Iran's and, you know, openly flouting, you know, the most repressive laws. It really is inspiring. And that's why in this article, I talked to Drew specifically about Iran and the silencing of dissent in Iran and abroad. And the case of Masih Elinejad, who is a Iranian women's rights activist here in the US, who faced not even her first assassination attempt a couple of weeks ago. It really has come full circle that, you know, just a couple of weeks after the assassination attempt of Masih Elinejad and also Salman Rushdie, that we have these mass protests in Tehran.
Compare and contrast those two, because hers you heard almost nothing about. And I watch a lot of news and I heard nothing about it. Rushdie obviously got international headlines. Of course, he's been under a fatah for what, 40 years now. So that one got a lot of headlines. Why do you think certain ones of those hit the headlines and certain one of them don't? Now, also, Rushdie's was on video, so that's part of it, to be fair. And he's a much higher profile. But the core problem, what the Iranian regime was trying to do there, it's the same thing, isn't it?
Exactly. So it doesn't matter how high of a profile the person is. We need to be paying attention to every act of Iranian-sponsored terror on our soil, whether it be a famous author like Rushdie or a prominent activist like Masih Elinejad. We need to be paying attention to Iran's actions on our own soil. It's a violation of our sovereignty. It's a violation of our freedoms. And it's honestly egregious that an Iranian-American activist, she, I believe, is an American citizen, is at threat of being gunned down in her own home in New York because she said something negative about a regime thousands of miles away.
Now, to come back to China for a minute, we know Vladimir Putin has executed and tried to assassinate people through various poisonings and other matters. We know the Iranians have been doing it for decades. The Chinese are more subtle about this, but it's no less wicked and evil what they're trying to do with dissent. Their methods are different. Like, you know, Russia invaded Ukraine. China's trying to do this, you know, economically and influence wise. They don't really want a shooting war. They because it's bad for business. But the spirit of authoritarianism, the same problem, the same human rights issues, it's all there. It's just wearing a different coat and using a different method, isn't it?
Absolutely. You're right. It's a lot more covert on the end of China. I think the bomb threat the faux bomb threat in the case of Drew Pavlou is, you know, one of the more open flouting of their anti-democratic activities abroad. But like I talked to Drew, most of their action is covert. So they have, you know, people on college campuses reporting to them about Chinese students who are, you know, talking about Tiananmen Square or criticizing the CCP. They have professors we've seen in the past few years that are conducting academic espionage. They're a lot more covert about it. They're not like Iran sending assassins to people's doors in New York City.
Now, you also, we talked about talking to Drew about his struggle. You also talked to a Chinese-Australian dissident, Vicky, I'll let you pronounce the name because I'll butcher it too, who's been the subject of Chinese state media smear campaign and serial harassment. I got to imagine, although the case is different and the methods are a little different, boy, it sure sounds like a lot of the same things, because the way you harass and crush dissent is pretty universal, isn't it? Tell us about her story like you did with Drew. Put a human face on that one.
I didn't speak with Vicky, but Drew is a close friend of hers. She's a pretty prominent anti-CCP activist who has been relentlessly harassed by agents of the CCP, her personal text messages being publicized on Chinese social media, you know, her personal devices being hacked, just systematic harassment. There's no other way to describe it. I can't even imagine being in the situation that she's been in. But yeah, her story is just one of many that Drew shared with me of Chinese diaspora communities and Chinese dissidents being relentlessly targeted by the CCP apparatus abroad.
Yeah, you also made a point to kind of draw these desperate threads together. You know, the wannabe assassins of Rushdie and Ali Najad, they're going to be brought to justice because they were caught. You know, they were literally caught in the act. But when it's the CCP calling in a bomb threat, when it's them crushing dissent, when it's them using things like diplomatic immunity to cover their actions in foreign countries, we're not going to get a quick, clean justice in that way. So how do you fight back against it?
Absolutely. And I draw this, you know, I draw attention to that in the piece because we need to start holding these regimes accountable for crimes they're committing essentially on our soil and against our own citizens. It's not enough to just prosecute their agents. We also need to start holding the governments that are the ones funding and sending these people out to harass American and Western citizens. That needs to be something that we peg to our diplomacy. You know, how are we going to negotiate deals with someone like, you know, Raisi in Iran when he's sending assassins to kill random American citizens? It's absurd.
Yeah, and the reason we don't do that is because, you know, Iran is obviously a player in the Middle East trying to always keep that delicate balance going. We know the issues with them in Israel. We know the issues with them in the Saudis. It's a complicated thing. So that balance buys them a lot of their human rights violations. China buys theirs economically. People are afraid to upset. They want to do business with China, so they buy theirs economically. You just mentioned the president of Iran. We just had the incident in New York City. Christina Amanpour, the well-known reporter, refused to wear a headscarf to the interview, and he stormed off mad and refused to do it, basically, or his staff did. That doesn't sound like a big protest compared to the economic stuff and the human rights stuff and peace in the Middle East. But what you're saying, little things like that publicly to leaders that make them lose face, which is something they do care about, I think that does matter. How does it land with you, though?
Absolutely. You know, I'm more enthusiastic than anyone to see the now mainstreamed upheaval against the Iranian government right now in the U.S. And I hope it lasts, because we can't go weak. There's no more time for weakness. Too many people have died at the hands of the Iranian regime for us to take a step back and give them a boatload of concessions. So seeing this mainstreamed upheaval against not only Raisi, but, you know, the government of Iran over what's been going on in the past week, it's really great to see.
Karim Rafai joining us. Now, you've gotten to talk to dissidents like Drew. You've got a little bit of a network. You're from a diasporic community. Not everybody listening to that has those kind of connections. What can someone do to affect it, just in their social media, in their conversations, in the discourse, in the way they talk about these things? just kind of the average person who, you know, doesn't have political connections and maybe doesn't think they have a dog in the fight other than maybe they do care about freedom. Tell them a few things they can do that actually affect change here. Is it in the way they talk? Is it following and platforming and echoing the dissidents that do get their message out? Give the normal folks a thing or two they can do, like on their social media, that would actually do some good here and not just yelling at the TV about how wrong it all is.
Yeah, that's a great question. I think the number one thing that someone who is not intimately connected to these issues can do is to fight the apathy. And the way that you fight apathy is continuing to talk about the human rights abuses that are happening, continuing to platform dissidents and the people who actually are being intimately affected by these anti-democratic actors, and fighting against the kind of everyday apathy of, well, that's thousands of miles away, it doesn't affect me, because in reality, it does. Every time you go to the pump and the price is above $4, you can point to, you know, the instability that's been caused by Russia. It's an everyday thing. It's for everyone. So you may think that you don't have a dog in the fight, but in the end, you do. You may not be as intimately connected as someone, you know, in Kiev or someone in Aleppo or someone in a diaspora community, but you are being affected by the actions of these regimes every single day. And you should be putting an effort to making sure other people know that too.
Yeah, that's really well put, my friend. Kareemer Fai joining us. We're going to have you back because these issues are universal. They're not going away. They look like they're accelerating in a lot of ways. But I also take some hope here, because I think the reason some of this is accelerating is because I think some of these regimes are legitimately scared, especially Putin, especially the Iranian regime. China's not going anywhere, but they obviously have a long-term plan that they worry about it. So we have to have hope, because if they're worried, that means that there's hope. Until we get you back, though, let folks know where they can follow you. We're going to link to this piece. It's a great piece. There's a lot of links inside the piece. Make sure you read those as well. Read it for yourself. Share it with folks. Make up your own mind. We'll link to that in the show notes. Let folks know where they can follow you and what you have going on until they see you the next time we get you on Hurtel.
I'm at Kareem Rafai on Twitter and Instagram. That's K-A-R-E-E-M, like the basketball player, R-I-F-A-I.
Makes it nice and easy. Good reference point, my friend. He's also a Young Voices contributor, so you'll be seeing him on all those platforms. We'll link to his page as well. Great stuff. Best of luck up in Michigan. I guess if you got to go somewhere up there, that's not too bad of a spot. We kid. Great information today. Important topic. Really enjoyed having you. We will have you back. Thank you so much for the time, my friend.
Thank you so much for having me.
Yes, sir.
When you need mealtime inspiration, it's worth shopping Kroger, where you'll find over 30,000 mouthwatering choices that excite your inner foodie. And no matter what tasty choice you make, you'll enjoy our everyday low prices, plus extra ways to save, like digital coupons worth over $600 each week. You can also save up to $1 off per gallon at the pump with fuel points. More savings and more inspiring flavors make shopping Kroger worth it every time. Kroger, fresh for everyone. Fuel restrictions apply.
Save big on brunch for mom, all in the Kroger app. Get 16-ounce packs of flavorful Angus 90% lean ground sirloin for $4.99 each with a digital coupon. Then buy two, get two free on 12 packs of delicious Coca-Cola, Pepsi, or 7-Up, all with your card. Shop these deals at your local Kroger today, or tap the screen now to download the Kroger app to save big today. Kroger, fresh for everyone. Prices and product availability subject to change. Restrictions apply. See site for details.